Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Clark Lamping, 27 years of career experience, a captain on Engine 38 for Clark County Fire Department in Nevada, County Fire Tactics Cadre member. The conversation Clark and I had should invigorate any firefighter who truly has love for the job, wants to leave the service better than they found it, and hopefully creates change with the future generation of firefighters within your own organization. Clark talks with such strong belief, enthusiasm, and a deep commitment to anyone within the fire service, conveying such a strong sense of authenticity and genuine conviction. One of my favorite things Clark talked about was being able to sleep at night knowing you did what was best, even if that means going against the grain and standing up for what you believe in. With that, I present Mr. Clark Lamping.
Morning. This is Clark Lamping. I'm a captain with the Clark County Fire Department. I've been on the job 27 years. I've been a captain for 15 years. I spent 1 year as a captain in training. I spent 2 years as a technical rescue captain. Clark County, I work for the Clark County Fire Department, which is Las Vegas area. People think of it as Las Vegas. If you've ever been to Las Vegas, you've actually been in Clark County. A lot of people don't realize that Las Vegas Boulevard, the strip as you know it, is actually in Clark County. And it extends all the way to the Circus Hotel to the north. That's Sahara Road. Once you pass Sahara Road, now you're in city of Las Vegas. So people think that Las Vegas is Las Vegas. You're actually in Clark County, and that's protected by the Clark County Fire Department. Clark County Fire Department has about 35 stations paid, and we have about 13 volunteer rural stations. We run close to 200,000 calls a year. A lot of it's EMS, about 78% is EMS based. It's a great job. It's a great place to work. I love my community. I was born and raised in Las Vegas. And I love the community. I love the fire department. All I want to do is ride around on a fire engine. I've passed up multiple promotional opportunities to the rank of battalion chief, because I personally feel that I'm just more valuable to the organization as a captain on a fire engine. I spent a lot of time doing career counseling with people, like a lot of young people, young men and young women come by and we talk about how to get on the job as a fire department. We do interview help. I'm very involved in the community, community events, open houses, pancake breakfasts, career day, stuff like that. Very, very involved with that. I'm really proud of the work that I've done with the community events and public education as well. I believe that we save way more lives with public education and code enforcement than we do with fire suppression. And I know it's not the sexiest. I know it's not the most fun. And I get a lot of pushback. I get a lot of grief from guys like, why do we have to keep doing this stuff? Why do we have to keep doing this stuff? Because when the chief hired me and I raised my hand, he said, I take an oath to protect the community. He never said protect the community on B platoon days or A platoon days or C platoon days. He never said protect the community only when the tones go off and we're fighting fire. The chief told me that we're going to do what we can to protect the community. And I believe that going out into the community and interacting with people and delivering this, the message, all the new research from Underwriter Laboratories, all that stuff that they came up with, who's delivering that to the public? When you're average Joe homeowner and you're a homeowner and you decide, hey, I want to learn about, you know, public fire safety. Do you go to Underwriter Laboratories website? Do you know that? No. So people don't know where to get this information. I believe it's up to us, the firefighters, to educate the people. So, and that's all several reasons why I just decided to stay as a captain, because I think that I am the most valuable there. Okay. So people, yeah.
Okay.
So any questions on that, Danny?
I have a couple, before I go there, can you tell us how you got into the fire service?
Perfect. It's a funny story. I am a first generation firefighter. I have no immediate family members that are in the fire service. I do have a cousin who was at one time, he was the most senior firefighter in the Pittsburgh Fire Department. He was a captain. I believe he did about 42 years on the job, and he was actually involved with the Ebenezer Church fire that collapsed and killed the firefighter and the battalion chief. That was his battalion chief that was killed. So besides him, I have no other family in the fire department. So I'm just spinning my wheels. I'm working in Las Vegas construction. You do pretty good in Vegas in construction. And my dad calls me up one day. He says, "Hey, do you get the newspaper?" I said, "No, I don't." He says, "Well, there's an advertisement in the newspaper that the fire department's hiring." And before he said that, Danny, I never even thought once about being in the fire department. Never once. I was about 27 years old. So he says, "Come on over to my house and let's take a look at this." So I went to the house and I got the advertisement. I said, "All right, that's something I think I could do, right? I think not knowing anything about the fire service." And my dad said, "Well, I know a couple people." So he put me in touch with some people, and I went talking to some people, and I decided, "Wow, these guys really talked this up really well. So I think I might have a go with this." And then you had to show up to the application process. And this was back in 97, Danny. So in 97, 5,000 people would show up for 200 jobs. So I'm standing, and I thought, "Oh, boy, it might be busy, so I'm gonna get there early. Like 4 o'clock in the morning." So I get there at 4 o'clock, and there's already 1,000 people in line at 4 o'clock in the morning. I thought, "Oh man!" And I'm looking around at all these people, and a lot of these guys are wearing other department shirts, right? There's other firefighters from other departments, and there's one guy behind me. He's talking about he's a battalion chief in Washington, and I'm thinking, "Oh man, I've got nothing. I can't compete with any of these guys." But I'll just stay in this line anyway, because. And I told the boss I was going to come to the job site for a couple hours, so I put the application in. And I got there on time. They only accepted 2,000 applications. I managed to get my application in, and I bought the books. I think it was a Barron's book. Studying the Barron's book and did really, really well. Scored a 95% on the Barron's book. And this whole time, I'm still thinking, "I don't stand a chance. I don't stand a chance. I'm just average Joe. I have nothing to offer the fire service. Nothing. I have no experience whatsoever." And so passed the written exam. I was in really good shape. So passed the physical exam. And then my dad put me in contact with a fire captain who was very, very influential. Uh-oh. Did I just throw you off there, Danny?
Nope, I can see you.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Uh-oh. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. If you need just to find the video, you can. That's fine.
All right. There we go. So I met with this captain, this fire captain, and he helped me out with the interview, and he put the good word in for me. And lo and behold, got accepted in the academy. Got hired out of 15 people. 15 people were hired in my first academy, and so I was one of them. We have a very, very difficult academy. It lasts about 22 weeks, and we have no problem. One of the things we are really proud of in Clark County, we have no problem firing people. We have about a 33% attrition rate in our academies, and which
Wow.
is again something we are proud of. I talked to a buddy of mine, Brent Brooks. He's a captain in Toronto Fire Department. He says they fire nobody. Once you get hired, you are in, and they will not get rid of you. So, and he says that causes enormous problems for the Toronto Fire Department. Well, we don't have that problem. So it was a difficult academy, a 22-week academy. Graduated, and here I am pretty much. So
Okay.
kind of a strange pathway, right?
Right.
Showed up at the fire station the first day, had no idea how to act. Right? I was a construction worker, right? And I've got guys junior to me, younger than me, that are senior firemen, and they're just getting in my rear end. Like, "Hey, no, no, no." I'm thinking, "Who are you?" Right? So I had a really, really rough first year, probationary year. Danny, I claim that I am the worst probationary firefighter in the history of the Clark County Fire Department, because I was running my mouth. I'm the brand new guy, and I'm running my mouth like it's a construction site, right? And we're going back and forth. This guy, who is this? Who is this kid? Brand new guy, and he's talking to us like this. Are you kidding me? And I wasn't putting up with anything. And it was a rocky road. It was a pretty rocky road, but I did survive. Again,
Okay.
no experience with the culture. No experience with the culture, and that actually made me a better captain, Danny. When we get these probationary firefighters in, and they're not ideal, they're not the perfect candidate, I remind everyone, "Hey, They're a lot better than I was. So let's give this kid some latitude. Let's work with him. Let's show him the right way before we start hammering his ass.
So at what point did it click to you, like, hey, I'm not acting the way I need to? And who did you find to kind of like guide you and take you under their wing to show you, hey, this is how this works?
Yeah, it took about a year. We had some really put me in a station with some really, really senior guys. It was the headquarters, Station 18, and the crew was very, very senior. And the culture was a lot different back then, Danny. It wasn't as there wasn't as enough training, right? It wasn't, let's take the new guy out and train him. It's, hey man, you better know how to cook, and you better be doing all the dishes, and you better be cleaning everything. And I did. And just I cleaned and cooked all day long, because at the headquarters it was almost 20 firefighters. It was a truck company, two engine companies, two rescue companies, a hose wagon, and a battalion chief. That's what was at headquarters. And I was in charge of cooking and cleaning for all these people. And on top of it's a very, very busy house. We were running on my unit was on a rescue unit. I was running 25 calls a day, every single day. Every single day. That station was running at one time. It was the fifth busiest firehouse in North America. There were over 20,000 calls a year just out of that firehouse.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a slaughter. It was a slaughter. So a lot of trying to figure it out myself. And I'm happy to say the culture has changed since then. And now it's the culture is, look, someone shows up to the station, we're gonna work. We're gonna work with this probationary firefighter. His training is first, and cleaning toilets is second.
Right.
Whereas I'd showed up to stations, Danny, and they would say, these toilets better be cleaned by this time. No one ever gave me expectations. No one ever said, oh, here's what you need to do today, blah, blah, blah. In fact, we had guys that would, when I came on, it was strange. So they wouldn't tell me anything. I would show up to the firehouse and they wouldn't say anything to me. I would just start working, and they would wait for me to mess something up, and they would just attack me. Just jump on me and attack me, rah, 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 rah. Like, well, no one told me anything. And that's when I'm given pushback. I said, if you want me to do something, you tell me how to do it. Show me how to do it, and I'll do it. I'm completely capable, but I can't figure out what you want. So that was kind of the culture back then. I'm happy to report that we've done a 180-degree turnaround now, and we do a really, really good job training junior firefighters with rookies in the station. We have a task book. I think our hiring process in Clark County, we do a good job. I think the academy is fantastic. And then when the probationary firefighters come out, they have a task book. And every month, we have every single month of their probationary year. And every month, there's a list. All right. You have to pull a crossleg. You have to throw a ladder. You have to pull a line to a window. You have to put on a class on a thermal imaging camera. You have to do a pre-plan of a commercial structure. You have to do a public service. You have to do a community event, stuff like that. And it is their first year is really, really well lined out. So there is no question what is expected when these probationary firefighters show up to a station. And I think we do a really, really good job.
That is awesome. That is awesome. As far as, so I'm glad to hear that Clark County has done a complete 360 from when you started. But as far as there are organizations and, even some company officers now that don't have expectations for their crew, for their personnel, why, in your opinion, why do you think that occurs? Where the rookie is looking. So, they're like, well, what do you expect of me? Because you're not telling me anything.
There's a couple things that could be happening, Danny. It could just be laziness. It could be laziness. It could be the fact that officer worked his way through the ranks very, very quickly and was not shown that himself. Was not shown that himself, and maybe that's how he was brought up, and that's how he's gonna manage his crew. I call that a lot of that's I refer to that as intellectual inbreeding. Right? If you stay within your organization and you never leave your organization and you never read a magazine article, if you never watch a video, if you never find out what's going on outside your own fire department, you're going to think that this is the only way. And that officer, for example, this example we're using, if that officer was brought up by an officer who did the same thing, who was brought up by an officer who did the same thing, they're just completely inbred. They don't know any differently. They don't know any differently. So that could be part of the problem. But and I in our organization, I think because of the task book, we're really good. Even if a probationary firefighter shows up to a less motivated company with a less motivated captain, at least they make it easy. He shows up and says, "Hey, Captain, today in my book, it says that I have to pull the 1¾-inch cross lay up a set of stairs to the second floor and charge it and advance it. Can we do that today?" And even those captains, like, "Yeah, I think we could probably work that in today." So it makes it that task book makes it easy for the officers as well, for the officers as well. And for everyone who's listening out there, if anyone's interested, I'll get my contact information out there. I'd be happy to share with you what our task book looks like, right? I'll send it out to you. It's great. You just use whatever you can. Just use whatever you can out of it.
And there's probably no excuse where if that rookie does that to said captain or officer and it doesn't get done, they start looking at that officer, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So our probationary firefighters, they have an advisor, and at the every single month they meet with their advisor, and he goes through the list. Did you do this? How'd it go? How'd it go? How'd it go? And then every single shift, the officer has to write an evaluation on that probationary firefighter. Did he do an EMS assessment? Did he run any fire calls? Did he listen to directions? Did he was he polite? All this, and then you have to write a couple paragraphs on what he did that day, and then the evaluator will read all those and have a conversation. And if there's a problem in there, the evaluator could call the captain and say, "Hey, I noticed on this day you said probationary firefighter Johnson did this and said this. What do you mean by that?" And I'll then we can explain. So they do a really good job of monitoring these rookies and training these probationary firefighters.
So to me, it sounds like Clark County has established what I would like to call standards.
Standards, yes, absolutely. We have standards for the probationary firefighters, and it's good. Like I said, Danny, we do a good job hiring. We do a good job in the academy. We do a good job on the first year. The problem, and not just with Clark County, but I think with the American Fire Service, is the 2-year firefighter. I'm going to tell you, I think personally, the 2-year firefighter is the most dangerous person on the fire ground, because what happens in our agency, a lot of times, this young firefighter will show up, and he's towards the end of his probationary year, and so he's got maybe 11 months on the job, right? And he shows up, and the captain will say, "What's your task book say? What does your rookie task book say?" And the kid says, "Oh, I've completed my task book, sir." And then the captain says, "Oh, good. So we don't have to do anything today." And then I think, you got a kid that's 11 months on the job, and you think, and this is just a hypothetical situation. You've got a kid that's 11 months on the job, and you just told him that we don't need to train today because his 1-year task book is complete. So what message are we sending that kid? That 11-month fireman's like, "Hey, the cap says I don't have to, I know everything I need to know after 11 months. I don't have to train." So that's a problem now. And a lot of times it's maybe the company, maybe the officer doesn't want to train. Maybe they don't know what to train on. Or maybe they don't know how to handle an 11-month firefighter. Or maybe this kid actually believes that I'm done. And our probationary firefighters, Danny, are not allowed to sit in the lazy boy until they're off probation. Not allowed to watch the TV until you're off probation. So it is a big deal when you complete your rookie year and you're off probation. You can ceremoniously sit in the lazy boy, and the brand new firefighter, he is allowed to pick whatever movie he wants. And he sits in the lazy boy, and the whole company sits with him in the day room, and we watch the movie that he wants to watch. So
That is
it's a
awesome.
really cool thing. It's a
That is
really cool.
awesome. That
Yep.
is awesome. So to me, it's refreshing because there's still departments out there that uphold whether it's, a new tradition, their tradition, but it's just the fact that there's a standard there.
Right. Yep. So back to this 2-year firefighter, and when a 2-year firefighter comes to our station, or if I run into a 2-year firefighter, the first thing I ask him is, "Okay, what are you doing? What are you doing right now?" "Oh, I said, "What are you reading?" And most of the time, Danny, it's they're not reading much, right? These very few firefighters nowadays are actually reading and studying. And I'll be honest with you, Danny, we Clark County, we don't get it's not heavy fire duty. Right, we don't get a lot of fires. We're 78% EMS, so we are running a lot of medical calls. We are not slinging. Even our busiest companies are not fighting fire every single day. So I'm not gonna sit here, Danny, and tell you that I'm this exceptional firefighter that I've killed, slayed the beast every single day for the past 27 years. I've been at busy companies. Yes, I've always been at busy companies. But right, we're not FDNY in the Bronx. This is not the Bronx in the 70s, anything like that. So in the absence of fire duty like that, Danny, what are we doing? What should we be doing to make sure we still stay sharp? We stay sharp. And in my opinion, Danny, I don't know what you think. It's you got to be in the books. You got to find out if you're not fighting fire, who's fighting fire? And if what are they doing? All right. If you're not fighting high-rise fires, hey, we had a high-rise fire in New York on this day. Hey, let's find out what happened. Let's read the report on what happened in New York that day and find out. It's very, very important that we are learning from other fire departments what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. We need to be learning, Danny. We need to be reading about these line of duty deaths. I hope that you never have a line of duty death in your organization. And one of the ways you can prevent that is reading about how other firefighters have died. These NIOSH reports are so thorough and they are so extremely valuable that every single NIOSH report I've ever read, I learned something. I learned something.
Okay. And so like just by talking with you right now, like I can see that spark, that passion. When did that form inside you growing up in your fire service career? Or
Yeah,
has it always been there?
I know. I remember the exact minute. I remember the exact minute. I was at that company I was telling you about, Station 18, and I found a Firehouse magazine. Just found with the station, and I start reading it. And here's an advertisement for Firehouse World in San Diego. And I'm talking, this might have been like 2002, Danny. So Firehouse World in San Diego. And I thought, oh, what's this all about? So I did a little bit of research and oh, it sounds like it's a convention for firefighters where they talk about firefighting. So I asked the crew, right? And I went around and said, hey, what do you know about this? What do you know about this? And the attitude back then, Danny, this is 25 years ago, the attitude was, you don't need that stuff. No, you don't need that. And right, the department's not going to pay for it, and you're going to have to take your own vacation time. That's a bunch of BS. We would never do anything like that. And so I did, talk to administration, said, hey, if I want to do something like this, how do I do it? And they said, well, we're not paying for it, and we're not going to give you any time off. So I thought, oh, that's kind of strange, but it's part of the job. No, still, no. So I did, Danny. I signed up for it. I paid with my own money. I took a couple vacation days, and it was in San Diego. So I don't know if you've ever been to San Diego. San Diego is one of the most beautiful cities in the United States of America. So you didn't have to twist my arm very hard to go to San Diego for the week. And it's a 5-hour drive from Vegas. I loaded up my gear in my truck and I drove to San Diego by myself. Showed up, got my own hotel room, looked at the roster, signed up, and my very first class was a forcible entry class by a fire. He was a captain. He was a captain in Huntington Beach on truck 4. His name's Ed Hadfield. He's since been promoted to chief. He was a couple chiefs, and he finished his career as the chief of the Rincon Nation in San Diego County. It was an Indian nation. And he was the very first class I took. I showed up with my gear, and this captain, Ed Hadfield, started talking. And I thought, wow, he's talking some stuff that I'm a 3-year firefighter at this time. He's saying some stuff that I've never even heard before, that I've never even thought of before. And we had 8 hours of hands-on training. I thought, this is absolutely fantastic. This is some education that I've never had before. And it was hands-on for 8 hours. My hands were bleeding. I was exhausted by the end of the day. And I was the happiest I've ever been in my fire service career. And Chief Ed Hadfield, at the end of the day, said, here's my personal information. If you ever need anything, don't ever hesitate to reach out. And I thought that there's no way. I took his information down, and it took me months and months to reach out to him because I thought, there's no way this guy, this heavy hitter, is going to want to talk to a 3-year fireman, right? And I'm going to sound like a fool if I call him and start asking questions. And one day, Danny, I picked up the phone and I called him, and he picked up the phone. He answered the phone, and we had a conversation that was hour-long conversation. And since that day, Danny, we are still close friends. He's now retired. He lives in Texas, and he's teaching at a college part-time, and just loving his retirement. But that was the exact day, and I remember the feeling that I had, and I remember standing there in my gear watching this guy hit a door, and I thought, oh my God, man, there's more to this job than what the Clark County Fire Department is teaching me. So that and that That changed that day, that minute, that instructor changed my fire service career forever.
Okay. And so to me, if this goes great with this next topic of outside training and obtaining outside information. I've said it in various episodes. I continue to preach it that outside training is a must. You have to get outside the four walls of your department.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Every Bill Gustin from Miami-Dade would tell you every department does something really, really well, no matter where, no matter how small, no matter how rural. There is a fire department out there that does something really, really well, and I want to hear about it. I want to hear about it. When I teach, Dan, I can go the story on how I end up now I'm an instructor, but every time I teach, I ask the students, please, if you've had a fire, I'm teaching large commercial structures. And I ask the students every time, if you had a fire like this, I want to hear about it. Please let me know. And I get home, and there's always about three or four students that have said, hey, we had a fire in this, we had a fire in this building. And I call the student and we have a long conversation. I said, do you have any pictures? What'd you do tactically? All this stuff. And I'm learning from these students from rural Nebraska, from Oklahoma, from Ohio, from all over there, and some major ones, right? Some major LA, Los Angeles, Chicago, and I'm learning as much from these firefighters as they do from me, as they do from me. So, yeah, absolutely. Everything we have on the Clark County Fire Department pretty much came from somewhere else, Danny. We didn't come up with very many things. Even our tools, right? All the tools we have, we didn't create any of those tools. We didn't invent any of those tools. Someone went out and said, hey guys, there's this thing called a Colorado hook. We've never heard of it before. Let's take a look at it. And they brought it back. And now every single engine and truck company in Clark County has a Colorado hook on it. So not just the education, it's the tools, and also, Danny, the networking. The networking is probably the most important part of leaving your own agency and meeting other firefighters and find out from them what is going on in the United States. I worked on Las Vegas Boulevard for 17 years, the Strip, right? Not a lot of heavy fire duty because Vegas is a relatively new city. So every single one of those hotels on Las Vegas Boulevard falls under a very, very strict code. Very strict code. After the MGM fire in 1980, we killed 78 people in that fire. A less known fire 90 days later was the Las Vegas Hilton fire. We killed 9 people in the Las Vegas Hilton fire. So in a 3-month period, we killed almost 100 tourists in high-rise fires in Las Vegas. And if you're into tourism and you're killing 100 tourists a year, you'd better think of something else to do because you're not going to last very long. So after the MGM fire in 1980 and the Hilton fire in 1981, we completely rewrote all of we, I mean the government rewrote all of the building codes and fire codes for the state of Nevada. And at that time in 1981 and 82, we had the strictest building codes in the world. So the buildings that were being built, the high rises that were being built in Las Vegas in the 80s and 90s were the safest. We were known as the safest high rise city in the world. So working on the Strip, right? Everything has very, very advanced fire protection systems. So we're not, as a firefighter on Las Vegas Boulevard, you're not pushing down halls every day, fighting fire, blowing out of a room, coming down over your head like you see some of these Midwest cities and things like that. Not a lot of that, not a lot of that going on. Some of it, but not a lot of that. But so in the absence of that, what do we do? What do we do? Hey, Chicago had a fire like that. I would call around and locate someone that I knew in Chicago and say, hey, can you put me in contact with the company that was on this fire? And they would, and I would have a long conversation with this cap company officer in Chicago, and he would tell me what's going on, what did they do, and how they handled it. And that's, again, that's education. If I can't fight high-rise fires every day like I want to, and I'm responsible for protecting high-rises on Las Vegas Boulevard, we'd better be doing something to make sure we're prepared. Make sure we're prepared. And I've done a lot of high-rise teaching across the country. We have a unbelievable cadre. Jimmy Davis from City of Chicago, Ray McCormick from FDNY, Bill Gustin from Miami, Dennis Laguerre from Oakland, Brent Brooks from Toronto. We got some Denver guys, Dave McGrail out of Denver. And we have this organization that we come together, and the message is, look, if you want to know how to fight a high-rise fire in a modern building with a modern fire protection system, in a hotel, then you talk to Clark Lampen. If you want to talk about fighting a fire in a 60-story residential, non-sprinklered high-rise with thousands of people in it, right? Then you talk to Jimmy Davis because that's his wheelhouse. He works in 34 in Liberty City. That is his wheelhouse, fighting fire in unsprinkled high-rise residentials. If you want to talk about fighting fire in these large commercial 10,000 square foot footprint in high-rises 50 stories up, offices and things like that, then you're going to talk to Brent Brooks out of Toronto. Then you're going to talk to Ray McCormick at FDNY. So we have a really good organization that, as a student in one of our classes, can get a sampling of what they want, whatever they want to hear.
Okay.
So,
Okay. With that being said, at what point in your career did you start to decide to work your way up to the rank that you're currently at? But like, when did you decide and what triggered that response as well to, all right, I think I'm ready to promote to the next step?
So Clark County, we are still growing. We are very fortunate in Clark County. We are still a rapidly growing city. And with a rapidly growing city is a rapidly growing fire department, and we are hiring like crazy. I told you in 27 years ago, my class was 15 students. A couple of years ago, we just had a class that was 120 recruits. And then as soon as out of 120, we graduated like 80. As soon as that one was done, we had another one that was about 60 students. As soon as that one was done, we had another one that was about 40 students. So we've hired 300 firefighters in the past few years. It's crazy. So the benefit of that is, we're building new stations, we're getting new equipment in, so you can promote really quickly. I don't necessarily agree with this, but you can be eligible to promote from firefighter. Your next step is going to be to engineer or driver. We call it the engineer. You can start applying after, I think, 2 or 3 years. You're eligible to promote to the next level, right? Yeah, good, good. So,
Bet,
and
yeah,
it's a
bet.
significant pay raise. It's a significant pay raise. But me, if I was the fire chief and the union president, it would be 5 years. I think you need to be a firefighter for a minimum of 5 years before you can promote. There is no way you will ever convince me that after 3 years, a firefighter has seen everything that he needs to see to make himself better for the next one. So that's just personal opinion, 5 years. So, me personally, Danny, I was a firefighter for 6 years, 6 years, and it was strictly a financial decision. I thought, oh, it's a significant pay raise. So I'm gonna put the application in, and I'm gonna take the promotional exam to be a driver. And it's a pretty rigorous promotional exam. There's a written portion and there's a tactical portion. And so I was promoted in 2004, approximately 2004, I was promoted to engineer and held that rank for 5 years. And some of the best years I could, I went to this company, Station 14. Back then, that was pretty heavy fire duty. Again, not compared to some of our other departments, but for Clark County Fire Department, we got some decent work there. And I really had a great experience, had some great crews working with me, and cut my teeth for those 5 years. I say I fought more fires as a driver at Station 14 than I did as a fireman at Station 18, because we went on so many fire calls. I had my gear lined up there. I would jump in my gear. We'd drive to the call. We'd drive the call. And if it was a working fire, even if I was the primary pumper, I would put my gear on. I'd grab the next engineer and say, "Hey, do me a favor. Stay here at the pump panel. That line's going to the Charlie side. That line's going to the Alpha side. You got this. I'm going in." And this guy's standing like, "What are you talking about?" And I'd put my gear on and go in with my crew. So, yeah. And I told the guys too. I told the captain when he's going in, I said, "I'll be right behind you. I'll be right behind you." So a couple minutes later, I was right behind him with gear. So, I did that for 5 years. After 5 years, I started studying for the rank of captain, right? We don't have lieutenants in Clark County. You go to captain. So I was eligible for a test before this, and I thought, oh, this sounds like a good deal. So I started doing some research and reading the required materials for the promotional exam for captain. And as I'm reading, I realized, I don't know. I don't know enough of this stuff. There's no way that I can safely lead a company. I need to do way more. I need to get better at myself before I can become a captain. So I started that day, Danny, And I started reading and training on every single thing I could get my hands on, except the required promotional material for the exam. I intentionally refused to read everything, anything that was required for the promotional exam, because it's IFSTA stuff. It's, I personally cannot stand IFSTA. I cannot stand IFSTA, and I refuse to read anything IFSTA. It's just so watered down, it doesn't even pertain to our fire department. I read as many articles and publications as I could find, and I studied for 5 years, 5 years of hardcore studying before I felt I was ready to take the test. And then I started reading the promotional materials to take the test. I finished really well. I finished 10 on that list and was promoted in, I think, 2009. 2009, I was promoted to the rank of captain.
Okay. And so upon c completing that, I'm not sure if you automatically get a company right then and there, or they make you rove around until a company comes available. But what were your expectations when you finally got your crew? Like, what were your standards and what were your expectations?
Good. So Las Vegas Boulevard, there's five stations on Las Vegas Boulevard, and those five stations are very busy, very busy. A lot of EMS, a lot of fire calls. I'm not saying fires every day, but a lot of fire calls. So if you're working on Las Vegas Boulevard, you're not sleeping. So as soon as you get a little bit of time and a little bit of seniority, you start moving outside of Las Vegas Boulevard, get a little more sleep. So as a brand new captain, I had zero seniority, and I took a position at Firehouse 11, which is on the south side of the street. If you've ever been to Las Vegas, there's the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, right? Station 11 looks, that apron looks right at the Las Vegas sign. So that's where we are, close to the Mandalay Bay, close to the Luxor. And fortunately for me, the whole crew was young. The whole crew was junior because senior guys don't want to work on Las Vegas Boulevard. So here I am, a junior captain. I've got junior firefighters. I've got junior engineers with me, and it worked out perfectly. My expectation was we're going to be prepared. We're going to train every single day. We're going to train, and we're going to treat our probationary firefighters with dignity and respect, and we're going to train those firefighters. And it worked out really well. So the reputation became that if you want to work and train, you go to Station 11, because we do not sit around and watch TV at all. Station 11 had a truck company, we had an engine company, we had a rescue unit. A rescue unit's an ambulance, so a two-person rescue unit. We're minimum manning, four on the engines, four on the trucks, minimum. So yeah, and I really cut my teeth on truck company operations there. Every, without an exaggeration, Danny, every single day we did some kind of truck training. The truck at Station 11 was responsible for the shopping and the cooking. And on the way to the store, every single shift, we would stop and spot a building and walk a roof on that truck company. So, and within the rookies, right? Obviously, the rookies, they want to train. They don't want to sit around. We had a reputation. We had a reputation. If you go to Station 11 as a rookie, you're going to work. And not just the task book stuff. The task book is good, but we would do other stuff. We'd tell this guy, hey, what do you want to do? What do you think you're deficient in? And we would work with this kid. We had door props out back. We were out there cutting carriage bolts, rotary saws, forcible entry props at the station. And we had the reputation that we were a training station, and the probationary firefighters wanted to come to 11 because they knew that they were going to work out that day. So my expectation was, we're not. I was at that station for 11 years, Danny, and the captain's
Wow.
office. I have my own recliner, and I have my own TV in that in my office. I can tell you completely honestly, Danny, in 11 years, I never sat in the recliner once. I never turned the TV on once. My attitude was, I'm responsible for every single one of there's 10 people there, so myself and nine other individuals, and everyone's young, and these people are young, newly married with young families. I am responsible for those individuals' health and safety, and I'm responsible for protecting this community. I don't have time to watch TV, and I don't know if anyone does. I'm not a very smart person. I'll tell you right now, I'm not a smart person, Danny, so I have to get up a little earlier in the morning, and I have to read a little more than the average guy. So that is what I did. I immersed myself in the books, in studying, and again, I went to conferences, Danny. Since that first conference in Firehouse World in 2002, I've been to conferences every single year, and now to the point that I probably go to five or six conferences every year as a student, as an instructor. And I never stopped. And I thought, this is so valuable. This information is so valuable that if I had a young firefighter who was interested, but maybe didn't have the funds to do it, maybe he's got a young family or something like that, I started my own scholarship. I'll call it a scholarship program, which I felt so strongly about this, Danny. I would take a kid with me every single conference I went to, and I would pay for his plane ticket, I would pay for his hotel room, and I'd buy his food and I'd buy his beers, just to get this kid to go, paying it forward, just to get this kid to go and realize that there is a way out there. There's a better way than what we're doing in Clark County. And I've continued that tradition now. 20 years later, I still do that. And even if I'm sitting at the bar and some young man will show up and say, "Hey, I sat in your class today. I thought it was good. Hey, where are you from?" Back and forth. I'll buy that kid's dinner. I'll buy his dinner. I'll buy his pick up his bar tab. Pick up his bar tab
Wow.
just because to encourage him, hey, pay it forward. And I tell him, I always tell them, every time I do this, I tell them, "All right, I'm going to pay you forward. It's your duty to locate someone within your department who's interested, but maybe doesn't have the finances to do this. It is your duty to get that person, and you bring him. And if you can only afford a couple beers, if you can only afford a sandwich or something, then you have to help these kids out."
That is
And it's
awesome.
worked really, really well for me. It's worked really well.
That is awesome. That is awesome. 11 years. So, a quick short story. When me and my wife got married, we were going to, for our honeymoon, we were going to go to, I can't remember, but I can't remember the place, but it was when the Zika virus was going crazy. And one of the things with that was if you wanted to get pregnant, like you might not want to get it. So we did a detour. I took my dad's advice. He had just come back from Vegas. So we went to Vegas. We stayed at the Bellagio. We visited a Clark County station. The only thing that comes to mind, maybe you might know, there was a huge flag. It was a pirate flag thing, and it said, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yep. I think that's Station 32, Danny. That is down there by the city center, right? It's kind of tucked under the monorail in the
Yes.
city center. Yep.
Yeah.
Extremely busy company. Extremely busy company. Funny story there. They built that city center. And if anyone hasn't ever been to Vegas, City Center MGM Corporation bought this piece of land and they put five high-rise towers on it. On this one, it is such a densely populated piece of real estate. The fire chief said, Hey, MGM Corporation, you're going to put a lot of people in the spot. Can you please build us a fire station?" A lot of negotiating because, those hotels don't give up money. So we had a very progressive fire chief at the time. And he actually got it in there. And that's why it's a strange shape. It's kind of curved. It's under the monorail. It's tiny. It's our smallest fire station. And that's because that's the land. They donated the land. They built the building and they bought an engine and a rescue. That fire chief
Right.
got the MGM to spend all that money.
Okay.
And so that is, those guys are busy. Those
Yeah.
guys, they don't sleep at all day, all night. Just wild stories out of Station 32.
And I bring it up because you said when you got captain, you stayed there for 11 years.
11 years. Yep. 11 years. And I probably could have, I could have left. I could have bid. It's a seniority bid station. When something comes available, you put your bid in, whoever has the most seniority go. I could have left that station 8 years earlier than I did. But I really enjoyed working in the high rise district. I really enjoyed the truck company, and I really, really enjoyed the crew. We had a great crew. And as those crew members, they matured and they promoted out, I had a constant stream of just young, aggressive firefighters who just wanted to work.
Okay.
So yeah, that's why I stayed with, and in 11 years, Danny, I probably slept 20 nights through in 11 years.
That's, I mean, they were busy because the guy that gave me the tour, he was very nice. He showed me the station. He showed me their unique system. He called it the locution system, where he was like,
Yes.
this part, the light will come on, it won't affect this crew. And I was like, that's pretty nice. And he showed me the little computer screen, and it was very, very nice, but a unique station, like you said.
Yeah, that locution is fantastic. It is It did an enormous amount of good benefit for the firefighters because you have a small speaker and a light in your individual bunk. So if you have multiple units at a firehouse, just that one will get woken up, and then they'll roll. So everyone else gets some sleep. I remember back when I was at that headquarters, Dan, I told you there was six apparatus and 20 firefighters there. You get a call, boom, all the lights come on and the speaker comes out over the whole station. Truck 18, you got a call. Everyone wakes up. So you got to go. Engine 18, you got to, and there was no sleeping. It was just madness. And again, Danny, we were running 50 calls a day, 50 to 70 calls a day out of one fire station. Everyone was up all, and even if the company that was not running calls, they'd still get up five times a night because the tones would go off and all the floodlights would come on in the dorms. So it was a pain in the ass. So locution, I would highly recommend that anyone just explore the locution. It helped out a lot. It helped out a lot.
You mentioned it, and I forgot to ask. So, can you tell the audience a little bit about Clark County? How many stations? You already mentioned four minimum on the engines, four minimum on the truck, two on the ambulance. So pretty much like the information on Clark County.
Perfect. So yeah, Clark County is the whole southern tip of the state of Nevada. Geographically, Clark County is bigger than the state of New Jersey. So we cover a lot of area. In Clark County, there's actually four fire departments. City of Las Vegas is a fire department. City of North Las Vegas is a fire department. City of Henderson is a fire department. And they have their own fire. They have their own police. Clark County is everything in the unincorporated city. So we run to the California border. We run to the Arizona border. So we have about 30, 35 or 36 paid stations, and we have 13 rural stations. Close to 900 firefighters now. And we have a airport. Obviously, a very, very busy airport, the fifth or seventh busiest airport in the United States as far as plane traffic coming through. So we have a fire station at the airport. We have one technical rescue team. We don't have a hazardous materials team. We took a hit when the economy crashed in 2008. It went bad. It went bad for Clark County for several years. So we lost a hazardous materials team. Minimum manning four on the engine. So like 30. 36 engines, eight trucks, probably 35 rescue units. What else do you want to know?
How many battalions?
Five battalions now.
Five
Five
battalions.
battalions.
Okay.
Yep.
And what is the first alarm assignment for a structure fire in Clark County? And I'm sure, and I'm assuming you probably do like residential and commercial or high rise or however you guys work it.
So a confirmation of a working fire in a single residential, you're going to get four engines, a truck, two battalion chiefs, and two rescue units. All right. Anything bigger than that, our biggest alarm is going to a high-rise alarm, for example, six engines, two trucks, two rescues, two battalion chiefs. That's on a high-rise alarm. As soon as we figure out that there is actually a working fire, we will immediately strike a second, which is going to send you six more engines, two more trucks, rescue, and then the technical rescue team will show up and other resources will start showing up.
Okay.
So,
And are your rescues, I know they're ambulances, but are the personnel on the rescues, are they allowed to participate in firefighter activities or are they strictly there for EMS?
nope, they have gear, they have a full set, they have SCBAs on the rescue, they have a full complement of hand tools, and they have some extrication equipment. So yes, first rescue arrives. Well, depends on the chief, but one of the rescues is going to be assigned the outside duties. So they're going to soften the structure, locate and isolate utilities, maybe throw ladders, anything, cut locks off, anything like that. The second unit is going to be fire medical. All
Okay.
right.
And EMTs or paramedics level?
Every single firefighter at Clark County Fire Department is a minimum of an EMTA advanced. Every single piece of equipment in the Clark County Fire Department has to have one paramedic on it.
Okay.
So every even trucks, rescues, the technical rescue team, everything. Every single unit is advanced advanced EMS with a paramedic on.
Okay. And is paramedic required to promote or no?
No,
No.
nope, not required to promote. If anybody's interested, we still say we are still so short on paramedics, Danny. The paramedic certificate is the golden, it's Willy Wonka's golden ticket. If you want to get a job on the Clark County Fire Department, you get yourself a paramedic degree. It's a one semester in college to get your EMT basic, one semester in college to get yourself an EMT advanced, and then one full year to get your paramedic. Once you get that paramedic, you write your own ticket. You write your own ticket. We are so short on paramedics, we are scrambling to find people to come to work. We're no different than a lot of the other agencies, right? Like we used to
Right.
talk about when I took my test, 5,000 people showed up for a couple hundred jobs. Now, Danny, we don't even close out the test. We say, okay, well, we're going to accept 2,000 applications, and 3 weeks later, we only have 1,200 applications. I still scratch my head. We can't find people to come to work. Can't find decent. I'm generalizing, but it's a lot different now than it used to be.
Absolutely. No, and I'm sure you're not the only organization to go through that, and to also state that notion of nobody wants to do this job anymore.
Right. Nobody wants to. And I'd rather be an influencer. I can make a lot more money being an influencer
Right.
than actually staying up all night and getting dirty and eating smoke. Yeah, it's strange times, brother. It is strange times around
Yes. Okay. One of the things I definitely want to dive into
here.
is you mentioned that you have passed up several promotional opportunities. And I want to kind of dig into why. And I also want to dig into your notion of I've heard, people say take tests and promote often when it's available. But you seem to look at it differently. And I kind of like the way your mindset is because, you mentioned 5 years is what you think firefighters should be at. They should have that role until 5 years and then decide to move up, which I agree. I agree. Like we are, in my personal opinion, we are shortchanging firefighters because there are departments where they have to do it. They have to do it. I get it. There are some where it's like, hey, as soon as you come on board, we're teaching you how to pump, we're teaching you how to drive, because that's maybe the way the dynamics of that department works. But if your department isn't having to deal with that, I think that there should be a minimum standard for promotion. So, my question to you is why? You have the education, you have the passion for it, but why not promote? Because I'm sure a lot of people want to know.
I do have the education, Danny. I have a master's degree in emergency management from UNLV, 27 years on the job. And to take the from my next step would be a battalion chief. To take the battalion chief exam, you have a task book. I don't think we call it a task book anymore, but and it is a very thorough book. You have to meet with every single battalion chief on your agency. Then you have to meet with battalion chiefs from the other three agencies. You have to meet with the command staff and find out what every single person's role on the command staff is. You have to meet the chief over the airport. You have to meet the chief over arson. You have to meet the chief over investigations. You have to meet the chief of finance. You have to meet the chief over workman's comp and all that stuff. And so it's very, very thorough. You have to do ride-alongs. You have to do ride-alongs with other chiefs from other agencies. And so I completed my task book, and because I thought that's what I wanted to do. And it was the next step. And it is a significant pay raise. Significant. And I started thinking about it, Danny, and I started seeing what the battalion chiefs do. And I decided that I am personal opinion. I'm probably sure there's a bunch of guys on my agency that would disagree. I think I am the most valuable to our organization as a fire captain on a fire engine with a company. Of the company. The fire captain is the highest ranking individual in the American Fire Service who still has direct supervision over customer service delivery. And as the battalion chief, very rarely do you interact with our customers anymore. As a battalion chief, you don't train any rookies. You're so busy and you're so removed that you're not doing interview help, right? Kids, no one rings the battalion chief's doorbell and says, "Hey, can you help me out? I think I want to be a firefighter." So it is extremely important to me that we treat our customers right. And not only myself, but I encourage if you're working for me, right, we do not complain about lifting old people up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Those people need our help. And to think, Danny, what would it take for you to call 911 and have a fire engine with four complete strangers come and pick you up with your pants down around your knees, laying next to your toilet because you fell off the toilet, right? How embarrassing would that be for you? You have no other resources in your life to get help. So here we show up and we treat, I don't care what time of the day it is, I don't care how intoxicated people are, we treat everybody with dignity. We treat them with respect. And I am the front runner on that. I show up first. I will be changing diapers. I will not ever do anything that I do. I will not ever expect my company to do anything that I have not or will not do myself. If a dirty diaper needs to be changed on an adult, I will do it. I will be the one picking up the 400-pound man stuck behind the toilet. I will definitely participate. I am not standing back and ordering my company to do this work. Absolutely not. And also we mentioned before, I'm very, very involved in career counseling, right? We have young people routinely come by the fire station. And when they come by, I invite them for dinner. Right? You don't just stop by and say, even if I've never met this person before, you come for dinner. I pay for that completely stranger's chow. And we sit them down at the firehouse table and we have a conversation. Why do you think you want to be a firefighter? Here's the steps you need to do. And depending on their motivation, right? They're going to get a certain amount of help. If this person's really motivated and really aggressive, yeah, they're going to get all of our help. And then when they're done, we make them that person do dishes. We make that person do dishes, and I say, this is for your resume. So now you can say on your resume, you came to Firehouse 38, you helped prepare the meal, you ate with the crew, and then you did the dishes. Right? That is for your resume. And then we'll invite them to do workouts. We work out every single morning. Whether we do skills courses, whether we do circuit workouts, a lot of times we'll go to a high-rise hotel and we'll do stairs with our gear on. We always invite these kids to come and work out with us just so they get a feel of what it's like to put the gear on. And as the farther they get, the farther they get, and then we move into actual interview help. So
Okay.
this is again something, Danny, that I'm very, very passionate about. I don't think I can complain about the people we're hiring if I'm not involved in the hiring process, right?
That's
If I'm
true.
not doing my part to help these kids out and finding quality individuals to hire, and I only help people who I want to work with, right? These are people that I want to be. I want firefighters like these to be on our organization. I don't understand these people who sit in the lazy boy and just bitch about these kids these days suck and no, and they do nothing about it. They do nothing to change anything, right? So those are just a couple reasons, Danny, that I stayed a captain. I still love training. We still train all of the time at Station 38. I'm fortunate. I've got all three of my firefighters have about 3 years on the job. And these guys, I'm really lucky. They want to work. We get to work one day and they say, Captain, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna work out. And then what do we want to do for training? I'm really huge in senior firefighters. I believe the senior firefighter is the most important role in the American fire service, the senior firefighter. And we are losing our culture because like I told you, Danny, we hired hundreds of people in just a short amount of time. So we have fire stations, Danny. You have a 3-year firefighter supervising a 2-year firefighter who's supervising a rookie. And no one is passing along that culture. No one's passing along the culture. So myself as a captain, I make sure that we talk about the culture all of the time. We talk about pride and professionalism. We talk about what that patch on your shoulder means. And when these probationary firefighters show up, I insist they bring that task book, right? And the task book usually goes to the captain's office. And the captain makes the decision on what we're going to do today, not at Station 38. The senior fireman gets the task book. And I tell the senior fireman, it is your duty to go through the task book. You figure out what you want to do today, how you want to train it, and you're going to train this rookie firefighter, not the captain, the senior firefighter. You come to me and you tell me what have you decided on the day? How much time off do we need? Do we need a hydrant? Do we need a set of stairs? Do we need a parking lot? Whatever you tell me and I'll make that happen. But you are in charge of training this rookie. You're in charge of teaching this kid how to cook. You're in charge. If I'm talking to the rookie, there's a problem. Right? There's a problem if I have to talk to the rookie. And it's not that I'm not capable, Danny. I love training. I want to get my hands on this guy. I want to work with him. I want to work with him. But I need to develop senior firefighters. I need to develop these senior firefighters. And if I can't trust I can't trust this kid to do a hose lay evolution, how can I trust him in a fire on a search by himself? Right?
Right.
So extremely important. That again, that is why I stayed as a captain. And I got to be honest with you, Danny, I love coming to work. I get a couple days off, 6 days off in a row. I just think about, well, I can't wait to get back. I can't wait to get back with my guys. We have such a tight crew. I can't wait to get back there. I can't wait to work with them. I can't wait to sit at the table with them. I can't wait to work out with them. All I want to do is drive around on a fire engine. I'm eligible to retire next year. Next year, I'll be eligible for I will max out my retirement. And every single time we get into a conversation, how long are you going to stay, Cap? How long are you going to stay? Danny, my health is good and I love coming to work. Said at this point, I have no desire to leave this job. All I want to do is drive around on a fire engine. Crazy. It's crazy. I love this job.
What advice can you give to anybody that, because you and I both know, we both love the fire service, but when you promote yourself and you come onto platforms and you talk the way you do, the spotlight gets turned on you, and so do the haters. And so what are your advice for others out there who have that motivation and drive, but might feel a little timid because they don't want to, in a sense, get attacked by their own?
Right. My first question would be, why? What is your motivation for taking the next step? What is your motivation for putting yourself out there? Right. What is your motivation for standing in front of people and talking? If your motivation is because I want to be famous, if your motivation is because I think it's going to be a good thing, I think they're going to start paying me to start teaching and stuff like that, you're gonna get a lot of grief for that. If your motivation is because you genuinely see a hole that a deficiency in your department or the American Fire Service, if you can genuinely see that something needs to be done about this and you're the individual to do it, and your heart is because I just want to help firefighters, you're going to take a beating. You're going to take a beating. But if that's your, if at the end of the day, at the end of the day, if someone emails me after a class and says, Cap, thank you very much. That was fantastic. I learned a lot. I appreciate you. That's it. That's your currency. And you will take a beating. You will take a beating. In fact, I just had a conversation via text. So, Danny, I'm teaching large commercial fires. All right. Large commercial fires. My department asked me, a training captain asked me to put together a program. So I put together this program. Danny, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I'm the expert. I'm the best large commercial firefighter in the United States. I'm not even the best large commercial firefighter, Clark County Fire Department. But in our fire department, we have no SOPs. And statistically speaking, we are four times more likely to be killed in a commercial structure than we are a residential structure. So we know it's dangerous. We have no SOPs to regulate us. And if you know what the NIOSH 5 is the same five reasons firefighters are getting killed on scene. And it's always communication, it's always lack of organization. And one of them is lack of an SOP or failure to follow existing SOPs. That's the number five reason firefighters in all line of duty deaths are being killed. So we don't have an SOP. It's four times more dangerous. So I took it upon myself, Danny, to put together a program on large commercial firefighting. And not once in the program do I ever say that I'm the best and these are all the fires that I've fought. But like I told you earlier in the program, I called my buddy. All the networking I've done for all these years, so I called my buddy in Miami-Dade Fire Department. He says, hey, Cap, training captain, do you have any information on large commercial firefighting? He says, yeah, I'll send it to you. Then I called my buddy in Oakland. Then I called my buddy in Chicago. Then I called my buddy in New York. Then I called my buddies in LA. And I have all this information, and I developed a class on best practices for large commercial firefighting. And I sent it, and I started teaching my own department. I started teaching Officers Candidate School. If you want to become a captain, you have to go to Officers Candidate School, take some classes. So I developed it for that, and I sent it before I taught anyone. I sent it to my friend, who's the Bill Gustin. Bill Gustin is the captain of training Miami-Dade, and he said, "This is really, really good. Can I use this for our monthly training in Miami-Dade?" I said, "Oh wow, yeah. If you want to, boss, if you want to, that's fine." And he's the one that recommended. He said, This information needs to get out there. No one's teaching it. No one has a program like you. I think you need to start teaching this around. So I put an application in and I got accepted. I got accepted at FDIC. I start teaching at FDIC. Then I have the training officer of Houston sees it and says, "Oh, can you come to Houston and teach this? I'm going to Honolulu. Shane Furuta, he's in charge of the 50th State Fools. He said, would you come to Honolulu and teach your program? Rob Fisher out of Shinomish, he just retired training captain out of Shinomish. He said, will you come train this in Shinomish this year? So I'm out teaching, and I had a captain send me a text and say, you're nothing but a whore. You're doing this for the money. You're embarrassing yourself. You're not qualified to teach anything. No one in Clark, this is worse. No one in Clark County is capable of teaching anything. We can't do anything. You're embarrassing yourself and you're embarrassing our fire department by teaching this." That's what he told me, a fellow captain. And my first question was, "Have you ever had the program?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Have you talked to anyone who's had the program?" Because I've taught it to about 100 firefighters in Clark. And I said, "Have you talked to anyone who's had listened to the program?" He said, "No." But he felt he could make this judgment on me. And the program, like I said, Danny, in the program, I never ever once talk about any large commercial fire that I've ever fought. It is all best practices. It is all line of duty deaths. It is near misses. And like I said, I teach this class, and someone will reach out to me and say, "Hey, I had one of those. Let's see it." And we have a conversation, and I include it in the class. And I say, "This guy from Quebec, Canada, had a fire in a Weber barbecue factory, and they got collapsed on. They got some injuries. They got their egress was blocked, and the whole class is p other people's stuff." So I am in it, and one of the accusations he made, Danny, was, "You're just in it for the money. You're just in it for the money. All you want is money." Well, if I do get paid, and I very rarely do we get paid. FDIC doesn't pay most of these. They just pay for your plane ticket and they pay for your hotel room. They don't pay you for the program. So, and most of the time, I'm out of money. Like I said, I always take someone with me, so I am completely in the red. I'm completely in the red when it comes to fire conferences. And so in my program, my big box program, Danny, I've probably got over 100 hours of research and development. This is my program. It's intellectual property. It's intellectual property. It's mine. I own it. But if a firefighter listens to my program and says, "Hey, that's great. I'm from Ohio. That would really be good," I give them the program. So I will email you the program. And all I want is for you to train your firefighters. I don't want any money, because a lot of instructors will say, "Well, you have to bring me out, right?" Because if you know anything about FDIC, that's just a commercial. You get 1 hour and 45 minutes, and that's just your commercial, and you're hoping a fire chief will come to you and say, "Yep, hey, that's fantastic. I want to bring you out to whatever city we're from. I will pay you what's your going rate." And some of these guys are making $5,000 a day to teach, right? I give the program away. I have no desire to make any money, Danny. No, and typically what happens, I've taught in Arizona, I taught in Phoenix for Fire Nuggets. Chris Slayer brought me out there, and he's going to pay me five. I said, "I don't want any money." He says, "I have to pay you. I have to pay $500. I have to pay you $500. He said, "I don't want it. I have to pay you." So I said, "You know what we're going to do?" I stood after the class. I said, it was in a hotel. I said, "Everybody, come to the hotel bar as soon as this class is over. I'm going to run up a $500 bar tab for everybody." And I had probably 20 students in the hotel bar, and we bought beers for $500 and signed it off right like that. So, if to answer your original question, if you're in it for the right reasons, I can sleep well at night, Danny. I sleep. Yeah, people are going to shit talk me. Absolutely, they're going to shit talk me. That is human nature. It's easier to shit talk someone than it is to pump someone up. It's easier to criticize someone than say, "Hey, can you please show me the program and I'm going to make my own opinion?" It's easier to do that. But I sleep well at night knowing that I am in this for the right reasons. I don't care about fame. I don't care about money, anything like that. All I want to do is help firefighters. And let me ask you this, Danny. Large commercial firefighting. When's the last time you had any training on big box fires? Walmart's, Home Depot's, Costco's?
I can tell you it's been a long time.
A long time. Even like a video, or even a PowerPoint, or even a hands-on. And these are dangerous, Danny. These are dangerous fires. You tell me how many line of duty deaths that you would like to hear about firefighters getting killed in commercials, and I'll provide it for you.
Well, I can tell you the first one that pops in my head was Richard Sheltra down in Pineville, because Pineville is about 30 minutes from my house.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. They're dangerous, and no one's teaching it, Danny. No one's teaching it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not even my own agency. My own agency. We're not, I can't tell you the last time. We had the Riviera Hotel, which is a fantastic experience. We had the Riviera Hotel. They shut it down. The county bought it. They were going to knock it down. And I just happened to be just, I don't get many things right in my life, Danny. I get most things wrong, but I was the captain of training, a temporary assignment, when the county bought the Riviera Hotel. And I approached the county and said, "Hey, can we use that for training?" And they said, "Yes." Danny, we had 9 months of destructive, hands-on, high-rise fire training every single day at the Riviera Hotel. It was the best training I've ever had in my entire career. And at the end, Danny, we set it on fire. We did live fire in a high-rise on Las Vegas Boulevard, set rooms on fire and actually fought fire. And I posted it on Facebook. Now I'm friends with Vincent Dunn. Okay, I didn't even know I was a friend of Vincent Dunn. Vincent Dunn commented on the video and he said, "Did you really set a high, do you really do live fire in a high rise?" And I thought to myself, if Vincent Dunn is commenting on my stuff, two things are happening. You're either doing something really, really right, or
Something really,
you're
really
doing
wrong,
something
right?
really wrong. And I
Right.
thought about it and I said, "Why, yes, Chief, we did do live fire in a high rise." And he never responded. So I have no idea. I still to this day have no idea if I was doing stuff really right or really wrong. But I've talked to other people that you've lost your mind. You've lost your mind for doing live fire in a high-rise building. So, but back to the original topic. Yeah, we did some large area stuff, large area RIT team deployments, things like that at the Riviera Hotel. But that was in 2015. Besides that, it's been years and years and years.
Right.
Years. And
Yeah.
anyone's listening out there, if anyone's listening out there, please contact me. I'll give you my information at the end of the program. Please contact me if you've had something like this happen. If you've got videos, if you've got pictures, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you when I find out what happened in your agency, how'd you handle it, and I will include you in my presentation, I promise. And I will give you full credit. I do not take credit for any of this stuff.
It's my opinion that most fire departments are trying to stick to like residential structure fires because it's the frequency, the type of calls we go on. But I think maybe there might be a lax because when you think of big box high rise, you automatically think of, well, it should have automatic sprinkler systems and things of that nature. Depending on the state, your jurisdiction, the codes, state codes, building codes, but it can happen. I know, another one that comes to mind was the Home Depot, I think somewhere out west,
Yep.
where it caught fire. The fire overtook the suppression system, which shows you that it can happen. And I think the mindset is, well, the frequency of that type of call, it's probably not going to happen. So we kind of not look at it until something, a near miss or an LODD happens. And then it's like, ooh, we might need to focus on this.
Yep, that's exactly right. And one of the things I talk about in my presentation, Danny, I say, okay. If you have ever thought to yourself, driven by a building and said, "I'm not worried about that building because it's sprinkler," or if you've actually said to another firefighter, "You don't have to worry about that kid because it's sprinkler," if that wor those words have ever come out of your mouth, I need you to do me a favor. If you're right-handed, I need you to take your right hand. If you're left-handed, take your left hand. Make a fist and punch yourself in the face as hard as you can. As hard as you can, because that mentality is dangerous. Danny, how many examples would you like? And I will provide them to you of Home Depots, of Walmarts, of Costcos, of Lowe's that are fully modern buildings, fire protected, modern fire protection systems that were custom designed for the building and fully functioning, and the building burned to the ground. We had one example, a Walmart in Peachtree, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta. All right. This 14-year-old girl, not a serial arsonist, not a career criminal, she's shopping with her mother and she has a cigarette lighter. And she's just walking through the aisles, snapping the cigarette lighter, and she shows up to the picnic aisle. And she snaps that lighter on the plastic packaging of a roll of paper towels. And the plastic packaging takes off and it sets the paper towel on fire, which sets the next package and the next package. And then that fire got to the styrofoam cups and the styrofoam plates. And that fire took off and it started burning ferociously in the rack system. A fire protection system, Danny, is only designed to pop three sprinklers. Once you pop more than that, it's not going to provide enough GPM to accurately flow what you need. All right. And the sprinkler system is not designed to extinguish the fire. The sprinkler system is designed to contain the fire, allowing the occupants to escape. So that fire took off. The sprinkler eventually activated, but by that time, the fire had overwhelmed the fire protection system. It was burning under the racks that the sprinklers couldn't get to. That 14-year-old girl, with one snip of one cigarette lighter, did $7 million damage to that Walmart. Burned completely through the roof. Read the report. Peachtree, Georgia Walmart. There's all kinds of fantastic videos on it. Another example, Spokane, Washington. This lady shows up empty-handed to a Home Depot. She shows up empty-handed. They got the whole thing on video. She walks over to the barbecue aisle. She picks herself up a barbecue lighter, one of the long barbecue lighters. Then she goes to the garden aisle and she picks herself up a can of True Fuel. Then she goes shopping and she picks up like a potted plant, some Miracle-Gro, and some paper towels, right? She takes the True Fuel, she dumps the True Fuel out, lights it on fire, and she just strolls out of the building with her cart full of $90 worth of stuff and burned the goddamn Home Depot to the ground. A single person, right? And she showed up empty-handed. And I will provide with you as many examples as you like of sprinklered buildings. There's another one, Redwood City. I think it's Redwood City. It's an Amazon building, right? Redlands, California. A new building that has been custom built, and the sprinkler system was custom designed for the building. It's a fantastic read. It was Jim Hartwell wrote an article in Fire Engineering last year about it. A fantastic read. I highly recommend you read it. That's where all my information came from this. How many things went wrong, and how do you burn down a 5-year-old brand new building with a full functioning fire protection system? Burned it to the ground. Impressive, impressive videos on YouTube with this one. So, and like you said, Danny, what's the most dangerous fire we go to? High risk, low frequency. What would Gordon Graham say? High risk, low frequency. That's why we're killing four firefighters to every one firefighter residential. And another thing, taking residential tactics into a commercial structure. All right. I can't tell you how many times we've done training, Danny, and we have a large Walmart or something like that. Engine pulls up, hits e-brake, firefighter grabs the inch and three-quarter pre-connect with the fog nozzle 200 feet and makes his way to the front door of the Walmart. Thinking, what are you going to do with 125 GPM on a Walmart fire? And first of all, how deep are you going to get with a pre-connect? And it's just that mentality. Just because it works 90% of the time, it works 90% of the time. Yep, it works 90% of the time. It's not going to work. It's not going to work at Walmart.
Right.
Not at all.
No, love it. Love it. Like you said, it's what, I think too, it's one of those topics where Chief Ike likes to say, stay in your lane. It's one of those topics, people don't, the frequency of those buildings catching on fire don't happen a lot. And so I think it's awesome that you are focusing on a topic that a lot of people aren't shedding light to until it pops up on the news. And then we talk about it for a little bit and then it goes quiet again.
Yep,
Fantastic.
absolutely,
Fantastic.
absolutely.
All right. I know we definitely talked about before we started. You just came back from California with the Palisades fire. And
Yes.
I wanted you to kind of just discuss a little bit everything you saw because the news, the media coverage on it is still going on, but it was definitely heightened during the whole process. So, what was your experience like?
Yeah, so we the Las Vegas Valley Fire Department sent a strike team. There was three engines from Clark County, an engine from Las Vegas, and an engine Type 1 engines from City of Henderson as well. And we sent a mechanic with us, two battalion chiefs, and we went to the Palisades fires. Then we sent another team. It wasn't a full strike team, but it was one engine from Clark County, one engine from Las Vegas, one engine from Henderson, and a water tanker. We sent them to the Eaton Fire in Pasadena. So we in Nevada, no one's red carded. I don't know why. I think it's something political. I'm not going to speak on it because I actually don't know. But no red card, for those who don't know, red card is your certification to fight wildland fires. All right. And we do not have training in red cards, and we are absolutely forbidden. If you don't have red card training, you are absolutely forbidden from going and fighting wildland fires, because you can easily get yourself killed if you don't know what you're doing. So we were there to provide structural support. So they would send us to neighborhoods. For example, we went to Pacific Palisades on the first night, and the whole neighborhood was burned out. So we were assigned to go just burned out structure to burned out structure, and we had to extinguish hotspots because they're still worried about these winds, these Santa Ana winds. They start blowing again, they kick up all these embers, and they'll send it to a neighborhood a mile down the road and set that on fire. So we had to go from structure to structure to structure and just extinguish hotspots. So we did that for a night. We fought a couple, several fires that night of homes that just started burning. So yeah, we were on one fire, Danny. A Clark County fire engine, a Henderson fire engine, a Las Vegas fire engine, and we were fighting the fire. And then Los Angeles City showed up, LA County showed up, and Cal Fire showed up. So we had like 10 different fire engines from six different agencies, and no one's communicating because we're on different channels. That was an interesting experience, and I gotta admit, I never thought that I'd be fighting fire with LA City, but that was our day. Now, and I can say for my resume, I fought fire with LA City, LA County. Those are some good guys too. Good. Those are some aggressive firefighters there. So then what else we did, we would go to communities that these communities, these beautiful communities, Brentwood and Pacific Palisades and Calabasas, they are up in the hills, and I can see where the problem is. People build on top of ridges, people build in canyons, and it is as dry that the fuel is called chaparral. They're building these communities, and these people are in danger. When that fire hits, they burn through these whole communities. So we were assigned to sit in this community and protect these houses if the fire got to us, by putting water, hitting any embers or ashes landing on the house. We're going to put water on the shrubs, put water in the house. And we sat there, and I looked down the canyon below, and I watched the wildland firefighters who are hand crews, who are down very close to the fire, and they're just cutting a line using bulldozers and hand tools. And those dozer drivers are, those guys have brass balls. Those bulldozer drivers are just cutting a line of vegetation, and they are 10 feet away from the fire. They have these flaps, they have these foil flaps. They just roll down to keep themselves from getting burned, and they just carry on. And then watch the air support. We were in a neighborhood that was so close one day, they were flying over. They had multiple Chinook helicopters, Black Hawk helicopters. They had this that big the C-130s were out there, and they were working to protect this community. It was actually Dr. Dre's community. Dr. Dre and Arnold Schwarzenegger lived there, and these ships were coming down there, and I saw these guys taking these angles and dumping water and these retardant on that fire and those ground crews and those dozers. We were praying that please don't let this fire get to us, because we're not going to be able to stop this fire in this community if it does. And I could not believe the bravery that I witnessed and the work that those California companies did, and those pilots and those dozer drivers. I have absolute enormous amount of respect for every single person that was fighting that fire. And they say, the first responders, I direct all of that should go to those firefighters, because those guys handle business. So we were there for a 15-day deployment. We did what we could. We protected communities as we could, and we came home. So yeah, it was a great experience. It was a great experience working with those individuals. It was a great experience seeing that at one time, just at the Palisades fire, Danny, 5,600 firefighters, 510 engines, 60 tankers, like 50 dozers, and something like 70 aircraft. That was on one fire. And we were on one fire engine with all that. It was the amount of resources, the amount of manpower to make that happen was just mind, and the amount of organizations. I don't know if you know this, Danny. Your ICS, as you know it in Carolina, that started in Southern California. That started, they were the fathers. It's called FireScope, and they've been doing this for a long time. And those are the fathers of modern ICS, those guys in California. So
I did not know
to
that.
organize that many resources was mind-boggling.
And one of those things, it's one of those opportunities, that you get picked, you go, and you got to witness it. So I'm glad that you're speaking on it because, a lot of people only know what they know from the news, but hearing somebody that was actually ground zero talking about it, man, that sounds just, I can't imagine what that looked like.
Yeah, It was unbelievable. Just you'd wake up in the morning and the whole sky was orange with smoke as the sun was rising. It was just ominous, just absolutely ominous.
That's crazy. Well, I'm glad that you were able to make it back, but I'm glad that you're also able to tell others out there, about the bravery of the men and women of all those departments, because it was more than just one organization out there trying to put a stop to it.
Yeah, it was all Western states, Danny. They had Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Texas, Utah, Arizona. We saw engines from all over the Western United States.
That's craziness. All right.
Yeah.
My last question I like to always ask the guests, and I can't wait to hear it. You kind of briefly hit on it, but I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Driving around on engine 38, brother. Driving on engine
That
38, attending conferences. Meeting firefighters from all over the country and all over the world, interacting with firefighters, finding out what they do, supporting my own fire department. I want to make sure that my guys are trained. At Station 30 on a B platoon, we are as trained as best as we can train. I want to make sure that anytime I'm teaching, if anyone comes up to me, please, I'd love to meet you. There's two things I love doing in life, Danny. Talking about fighting fire and drinking beer, my two favorite things. If you ever see me anywhere at a conference or anything like that, please, I am not some famous person. I don't travel with an entourage. I don't have a bodyguard, right? I am no different than you, Danny. I'm no different than the 1 year firefighter. I'm no different than the battalion chief. And that's one thing I love about the fire service. The majority, 99% of all the firefighters I met are completely approachable. And when you take a class or you listen to someone online or you listen to a podcast and that individual says, "Hey, if you have any questions, reach out to me. Here's my email address, here's my Facebook page, and here's my phone number." Hey, if that individual didn't want to talk to you, he wouldn't give you that information. He wouldn't give you that information. And so I put it out there. If you have my number and you want to talk, please talk. Absolutely. If I run into you, please come into me. Please come up to me. And the majority of the American Fire Service is generous like this. We're not completely untouchable at all. I just love meeting firefighters and talking about fighting fire and drinking beer. That's where I see myself, Danny.
Okay. One last thing. So you mentioned earlier, you truck work, but you're on an engine.
Yep.
Is truck work a thing and you just happen to just get on the engine, or was it like, all right, it's time for me to, I want to deep dive into the engine side?
All right, so a couple of years ago, several years ago, we got our in 2008, we lost our technical rescue team, we lost our hazardous materials team for budget cuts, and it was a huge hit for us. So several years ago, they decided we're going to bring the technical rescue team back, but we're not going to have a dedicated unit. We're going to cross man it. So I was at Station 11. They decided we're going to use Station 11 and Station 21 are going to be the two stations to cross man the technical rescue team. So mind you, Station So in Clark County, you bid a station, you don't bid an apparatus. So we had a truck 11, engine 11, and a rescue. So I was a captain on both engine 11 and truck 11, whatever the schedule was. So then they deliver this technical rescue unit. And now, right, and back then, I felt that I was a good truck captain and I was a good engine captain. So now they drop the technical rescue team on them. The program's just getting started. And Danny, it was like 40 hours a month of technical rescue training. It was every damn near every single day technical rescue training. And instead, we still had a fire company. And so I'm logging all the training, and the chief calls me up and says, "You're deficient in all your training." I said, "BS, we do the most hourly training than any fire station in the county." He says, "No, you still have to be doing all your fire training on top of all of this technical rescue training." And I thought, it's absolutely unreasonable. So we're expected to do engine training, truck training, and technical rescue training. And technical rescue was not my deal. I could have been a rescue technician, Danny, but actually being a supervisor for a technical rescue team, being the one individual that says, "All right, here's where we're going off the edge, tie up that anchor, use those knots," that's not my forte. That was not my forte, and I felt that I was doing a disservice to my company and the people staying in that position. And I was just spinning. It was so busy there. I'm not saying it's impossible, because we've got some very, very talented captains on the technical rescue team. All day long, absolutely, it wasn't for me. And I decided that I just needed to slow down. I need to focus on fighting fire again. And so I left. That's what caused me to leave Station 11, and I went to 38, which is just an engine company. And I said, I'm going to simplify my life, engine work. We're going to throw ladders, and we're going to pull hoses, and we're going to be really goddamn good at what we do. That's what we're going to do. And that's how I ended up at Station 38. I'll take a truck any day, though. If you're going to offer me a truck, I still love truck work. I love truck training. Oh, it's some of my favorite. But for now, I'm Engine 38.
Cap, I you don't know how much like it means to me that you were able to go, listen, this isn't for me. This is not what I want to do. I know of individuals that will just stay in a role because they just don't want to admit that it's just not for them. And I don't know if it's because, firemen, we have that bravado about ourselves, we're macho, we can do everything. But the fact that you stated to yourself, like, I'm doing myself a disservice, and then I'm doing the company that I'm supervising a disservice, that just speaks volumes because we have individuals that will not admit that.
Yeah, ego. It's ego, Danny, and ego is the most dangerous. It's the most dangerous thing in the American Fire Service is ego. Someone who won't admit the wrong, someone who won't admit that there's a problem, that is someone who refuses to listen to someone junior to them because what can someone junior teach me, right? I got news for you, man. That junior guy, he's got four tours in Afghanistan. I want to hear what he has to say, right? But we've got individuals that, right, I'm not going to listen to anyone. Yeah, put your ego away and you're going to be pretty good in your career. Big ego, small career. Small ego, big career. I came up
Absolutely.
with that myself, Danny. You can use that.
Cap, I appreciate this. I appreciate the conversation. I love hearing the passion in your voice. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your day to do this.
Yep, I appreciate it. I Danny, and I appreciate you, brother. I'm happy that the first nine people you invited to be here today didn't show up, so I got the call.
Yeah,
And
right.
I appreciate you doing what you're doing. You are doing something fantastic for the American Fire Service. You are bringing people together. You are the lightning rod that brings individuals together and allows us to get our information. I absolutely appreciate that, brother. You're doing a fantastic thing, Danny.
Thank you. That really means a lot. I've heard it from several other individuals, and I just want to say thank you. I'm just trying to let others know, like we mentioned earlier, like how the newer generation doesn't really want to read. Okay, if you don't want to read, I get it. But listen, you can listen to conversations about things that you can pick up, little nuggets, tips that could possibly help your career. So, like I said, thank you, Cap. Don't ever change. It seems like you're not going to. The haters are going to hate, and that's fine, but you're going to continue doing what you're doing.
Yep. And if you're I'll be at FDIC this year teaching big box. Also Honolulu, if you're in Honolulu in June, I'm going to be doing the 50th State Fools, same thing, the big box presentation. And then in May of this year, I'll be in Shenomish, Washington for doing the big box, a 3-hour presentation there. I'll give up my information, personal email address
Yes,
is
go ahead.
Clark Lamping, CLARKLAM, as in Mary, P as in Paul, ING, at hotmail.com. No dashes, anything like that. Clark Lamping at hotmail.com. Personal cell number, 702-521-4584. 702-521-4584. And I'm on Facebook. I spend more time on Facebook than a 16-year-old girl does, Danny. So there's just a lot of information on Facebook. And hey, everyone who is out there listening, if I didn't want to talk to you, I wouldn't have given you that information right now. Please
Absolutely.
reach out. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything, please, I want to hear from you. And if you're ever in Vegas, all right, please look me up. All right.
Awesome.
Please look me
Awesome.
up.
Awesome, Kat. Like I said, I appreciate it. I've enjoyed this.
Me too, brother. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.